This is the one with... Oh my god, I got a sty in both eyes.
The sun!
This is the one with... Oh, sorry, guys.
This is the one with... Oh, my shoelaces are tied.
Guys, I think this is Blink.
Here we go!
We're still on our endless voyage, all through time and all through space.
With Levine and Angels now, Daleks, Cybers, and Dude, wow.
Tennant, Smith, and Eccleston, Gallifrey, where it all began.
Doctor Who is cool again, that was Russell's master plan.
Who back when? Reviewing all new Who there is. Who back when?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Rose and Donna, Amy Pond, Rory, Martha, and beyond. Join us on this odyssey, what other choice could there be than Who back when?
Who Back When.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode N038 of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. I am Bonkin.
Or Dark Past.
Someone needed to say it.
And today we are recording a very special episode for not one, not two, but I want to say three reasons. Number one, we are reviewing the long-awaited Blink. Number two, we have a record amount of people surrounding the record amount of microphones. Anyway, to my left is
Nicolelia. How you doing, podcast land?
To your left is
Drew Back When.
To Drew's left is
token female Marie,
the long-awaited Marie.
Welcome to the show, Marie. And to your left,
let's go with Rawmeister.
Hello, Rory.
I will never go with Rawmeister.
No one does.
The prodigal son.
Marie, welcome very, very, very much to Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast.
Thank you for being our token, you know, equality czar.
Yeah. Important.
Because that job was getting tough. How did you come to find Doctor Who?
Only the newbies. We've tried the old ones and didn't sound well, but I love all the new... I know, that's a terrible thing to
You're
say.
You're losing all our fans.
I know, I'm sorry. I'm going to go back and try them again, but I've religiously watched all of the new ones multiple times. Blink is one of my all-time favourite episodes, so I'm very excited.
In fact, you insisted on joining the show on this very same review.
Yes. It did.
Very, very cool.
If you're going to go back and watch the old ones, you know, you could accompany them with some kind of after-episode listening experience.
Perhaps.
I don't know what that'd be, but...
Maybe I will.
Eventually, by the way, we will have found a suitable Who Back When nickname for you.
Okay.
Another reason why this is a slightly special episode is that I say this assuming the answer yes. I tried to text JD, the only Who Back Whenner missing from the room, but my phone died because he does not like this episode.
Really?
Gasp, you should.
Hang on. You
Gasp,
asked
I did.
All, yeah? Maybe some of us are on JD's team. You don't know. Let's get to the end of the podcast and figure it out.
Point taken.
Yeah,
sure.
In the newfound spirit of diversity, we might disagree.
But what I was going to text him about, and Future Bonkin will jump in just a second to say if this actually happens or not, but at some point a little bit later on, in this episode, when we are done with our review, JD and I might jump in with a sort of devil's advocate review.
Retcon the review we're doing right now.
Yes, exactly. Bing bong, Future Bonkin here. Yep, JD will join us a little later on. And, ... that's not all. So stay tuned. Bing bong. Shall we jump into a bite-sized chunk of Who?
Let's. Bite-sized chunk
of Who. We start off with Ali Sparrow and her friend Kathy Nightingale inspecting a pseudo-haunted house in London.
One weeping angel later, Kathy has been transported to 1920s Hull, City of Lights.
Off goes Sally Sparrow to solve the mystery, almost entirely without Martha and the Doctor,
who communicate with her via DVD Easter eggs.
Yada yada yada, you know what this one's about. Don't blink.
B-Scow over, you are welcome.
Aren't you just? Let's take the mystery out of this right away, shall we? Like it or don't like it. Rawmeister.
I loved it.
You loved it?
I did.
I was super curious about how you'd feel about this.
This may be the first episode of Doctor Who I've really loved.
Is that because the Doctor is hardly in it?
No, I enjoyed his appearances. No, it was just a fun episode.
Now, for a little bit of background, podcast land, Rory has seen this for the first time this week.
And the second time this week, yes.
Oh, wow.
Oh, well done.
I've watched it twice within the space of 24 hours.
Held up both times?
I actually enjoyed it more the second time.
Ah,
oh, very
good.
Imagine the fucking third, mate. The third's going to blow
my
your
God.
Mind.
Yeah, you won't have to jump at all during the third.
Has it potentially convinced you to maybe give Doctor Who a second chance?
I could happily watch, like, the second best episode and go from there. Yeah, I mean, it's all downhill from here, right?
Derek Jacobi's on next week.
Derek freaking Jacobi.
Oh, that sounds pretty good. Okay.
It is. It's very, very good.
Is there anything else to recommend this?
Tune in next time.
Okay, we'll see.
Marie, what did you think?
I love it as well. It's always been one of my favourite episodes. And watching it again, I'd forgotten how funny it was. I remembered it being terrifying, I really enjoyed it watching it again recently.
Nice one.
Got to follow that, have I? Well, you guys are all loving it, so I sort of feel like I shouldn't love it, but it's pretty bloody good.
I have a mixture of emotions. It is amazing. As an episode goes, it is amazing. But I'm struggling to place it in the cat now, having accomplished a lot of classic and lots of New Who, as a pure Doctor Who episode, I'm wavering on it. The things
really?
That I love about Doctor Who may or may not be present in this.
I absolutely love this episode, and I absolutely remembered loving this episode, but I misremembered which episode it was.
Oh. What? So, how?
What? Did you think this was Love and Monsters?
No. Oh, God, no. Mainly because we reviewed it.
Do you think it was one with Donna Noble?
No. I would have hated it a priori in that case.
Did you think it was the one with Donna Summer? Summer. Fuck.
Or Donna Sutherland.
There's another Weeping Angels episode. I don't know what it's called. One of you might know.
There's a later series with soldiers. Loads of them.
Yeah, they're like in a forest.
That's Amy Pond.
Yeah, that is Amy Pond.
See, there you go. And I was thinking of that episode. I remember very distinctly loving Blink when it came out.
I don't like those episodes.
Oh, really?
I have issues with those episodes.
Oh,
I was wondering if they would ever come back, because there was something in the episode that indicated they would come back, because without getting too ahead of ourselves, that when the Doctor's in the 60s, he said that they got sent there by the Angels. So
true.
I was wondering if that would ever get tied up in a future episode.
Oh, I don't know if it does. Do we get to see how that happened?
Was
it
sent to the 60s?
Like when he shows up in the 60s when Billy gets sent there. He says, "How'd you get here? Same way you did."
It was probably even the same angel, because
and that didn't happen in the episode. So I figured maybe that's something that happens later down the line.
Yeah.
Either way, yes. God damn it, absolutely loved it. Can I start us off with a question? How come no one ever blinks with one eye at a time?
Damn it, that's what I was going to say. You can't call the episode Wink.
I was like, you could wink and then. Wink.
I literally tried, and I'm sure we all did. I tried doing that today.
Me too.
And I was like, nailed it. Fuck these guys. Yeah. This is awful.
Do that because Amy Pond does that?
Oh, I forget she does that. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Oh, does she?
Well, because she has like angel in her eye.
But she's winking one eye at a time.
Yeah.
Oh,
I
totally forgot about that.
To me, someone said don't blink.
Someone came up with it on a forum somewhere, and Stephen Moffat went, "Have a bit of that."
I was half expecting that to come up in the episode, and they would find it wouldn't work or something.
No. Well, I'm glad that it comes up in a later
episode.
Apparently,
it's harder than you think as well to do one.
It is hard to do, but I practiced it earlier today.
I feel like if my life depended on it, I would have.
Hang on, sorry. I cannot believe I haven't said this, but we're recording in front of a live studio audience. In the audience, we have Mirimu, who is waving right now, and Jim, who also needs a nickname.
Jimbo.
Jimbo.
Jim has chaperoned Marie here today.
I know you love that nickname.
Jimbo, who may be joining us for a little mini review later on in the episode.
Ooh.
He looks a little skeptical right now. But the reason I brought that up was the live studio audience bit, was that as we were talking about winking, Minimo was practicing it.
Oh. And did it work?
Is it possible? Can you? Oh yeah. Now she's.
You just blinked while you did that.
Biggest blink I've ever seen.
You are fully dead, and by dead I mean you live in a different place with quite clearly a full and fulfilling life.
Let's get to that later.
Let's get to it now.
Fantastic segue. Is this what the angels have always done, or will always do?
This is full. Like, so at the time when I watched Blink in 2007 and sort of hitherto, I thought, oh, that's an interesting take on murder. It's not, it isn't. It's, you know, in this potential of what your life could have been. Mm. They feed off that and the aspect that you have to go live in a different time. So a couple of things that just jump straight off the bat for me. That's not murder.
You're
not an assassin.
It's still pretty awful, isn't it?
It's awful.
It totally depends. In the present.
Yes, exactly. Yes,
exactly. So we're saying that's akin to some description of
depending on where you go, you could have a better or worse or longer or shorter life. It's just luck of the draw, really, is
Probably yeah. shorter, because yeah. you always go back in time.
But here's the other issue. My other issue with being sent that far back into time is like, why aren't you all mega millionaires?
Yeah, oh, just yeah. bet on the lotto or become the world's dominating whatever. Like, I mean, crazy dictators, because you know the course of history.
Well, see, the lotto I wouldn't be able to do, because I don't remember the fucking numbers. Every single World Cup. All... things, like, you know, who's the next prime minister?
Unless it's 1966, I'm fucked.
Go back in time and be Pele's manager.
Yeah, literally anything.
I don't get that joke.
I assume this boy's got something.
Fuck all of your money on IBM stocks, whatever it has to be.
Yes, yeah. exactly. If nothing else, even if everyone has such strong moral beliefs that they aren't going to take advantage of it financially, surely the timeline will have been completely screwed up by now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's immediately what I would do. I'd be like, okay, cool. This sucks. All my loved ones are indifferent and, you know, I'm going to have to get over that grief-wise. But also, I'm going to make some motherfucking money. I'm going to make all of the money.
Well, this is a slight bugbear I had with the episode. Much as I enjoyed it, I feel like there was less inherent in danger with the angels. They would have been scarier if we'd seen someone really suffer a horrible fate because of this. Like, someone could have been sent into a really awful place where they get killed pretty much straight away, or just have a really terrible life. But both of the people we see this happen to have very seemingly good, decent yeah. lives. They live to a fairly ripe old age.
And they seem really happy with
those
it as
kind
well.
Of things. They don't seem like they've had a horrible... They don't seem worse off for having this happen to them.
But this is what I was saying about this sort of assassinate. You know, that takes the shine off the idea of being set back. It's like, oh, I go back and, yes, absolutely missing people, but find true love and start a family and also be filthy.
Initially, I thought the angels were going to turn people into other angels. I thought that's where it was going. I think at the beginning when you saw the angels in the window after, what's her name, had disappeared. Nightingale had disappeared and there was an angel in the window. I thought for a second that was her, and that seemed like quite a scary prospect.
Oh, that's nice one. Yeah, that's very nice. I mean, you say that, but sorry to spoil this, that sort of happens in a way with Amy Pond with a future companion.
Yeah. Okay.
I think when they expand it, see this, what I again similarly found and has since maybe spoiled my recollection of the Weeping Angels as a villain is that they were perfect for this specific episode, and then when they were branched out into full villainhood across multiple storylines and with other features to them, they started to be less good.
When you say other features, does that mean that in future... Oh, sorry, cut you off there. But does that mean that in future episodes with the angels, they actually kill people? Or they have a different agenda? They do.
They snap someone's neck, don't they?
Yeah, and they sort of embody people as well. The angels are talking through people.
Oh, wow.
In that episode that you were referring to. Or that
Angels Take Manhattan?
No, sorry.
The soldier one.
Yeah, yeah. So they kill him, they snap his neck, and they talk through him. And then there's the thing about looking into the eye of an angel. And that's when she starts to turn to stone.
Exactly.
The thing that bothers me about the later ones, in the beginning, I think they were the perfect monsters. And this idea of them being the lone assassins. And then you go into the one where there's hundreds of angels everywhere. And suddenly, they wouldn't be able to move because they would...
That was the whole point.
They trapped them, the four at the end. They're looking at each other and they're trapped like stone forever. And then suddenly you've got 300 angels and they're just not... They shouldn't be a threat, but they are.
They definitely seem like a one-episode villain. One really good thing that it weakens it to bring it back.
Yeah. Mm.
But I wonder if it was just the popularity
of
this episode.
I think it was so
popular. Yeah. I mean, I wonder if it was that, or if there was, as in Classic Who, there was constantly this very deliberate search for a new villain that would take over as the recurring villain.
Yeah.
And in New Who, I feel like maybe two alien races have tried this. There have been the Angels, but then also the Silence,
I haven't heard much from them lately.
I don't even know what you're talking about, but that was a good joke.
Who are actually not that dissimilar. I mean, there's that weird paradoxical concept to them, right? Mm. The Silence that you can't remember.
Yeah.
The second they leave you, basically, you forget that you ever met them.
Mm. And again, the idea of them is almost scarier than...
Yeah.
Them.
Yeah, exactly.
Puts me in mind of the Borg in Star Trek. Like, very effective to use, like, once or twice, but if you keep using them, it just doesn't work as well.
Also an interesting point, given that Doctor Who has its own Borg equivalent in the Cybermen.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Or, I should say, Star Trek has its own Cyberman equivalent.
Okay, yes, no, that is very true. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so it's going to be one of those things that, you know, will. But for this specific episode, they were great. There were some other issues I had. So namely, throwing a rock seemed like an odd choice.
Yes.
We didn't see them do anything similar in the episode.
Or since ever.
In fact, that entire scene is really weird to me. How could the Doctor have known, based solely on the transcript of a conversation that takes place much, much later?
Oh, but she gave him a dossier.
Yes, it's a full dossier.
Well, she presumably she remembered everything. She wrote down everything she remembered about it.
Well, so how could he know exactly, like, well, I mean...
She probably took pictures.
But his description is so detailed, and even like the timing of now,
well, if you just written, it's just took a picture, I just write that
and
the way
exactly.
That you strip, I mean, I have more of a problem with the ease in which she strips wallpapers anyway.
Well, I suppose it's already been done. He's put it up very loosely so she can easily tear it off.
Would he have written that and then wallpapered the room?
That'd be a good like 10 minutes of an episode, just the Doctor wallpaper. Prequel.
What I want to know is how many prospective tenants, no pun intended, he had to kill over the intervening 40 years to be like, no, this house must remain empty, like, and you must not re-wallpaper.
Yeah, every so often it's like, do you know what, Maud? I reckon we should. This place needs a lick of paint. No.
But yeah, how many times do you have to tell someone to duck before they fucking duck?
Sally. Well, maybe he had written it in many places on the wallpaper, so eventually she'd get the message, hopefully in time to duck.
Also, it rather gives the lie to the line later in the episode. Stones can't kill you. Yes, they can. They can take your head off.
Okay, more problems with that specific scene.
Okay, go for it.
They feed off time, energy, potential energy. They zap you back. Why would killing someone with a rock help you in this situation?
Well, presumably the motive was just, let's knock her out so that she can't see you. Yeah. And then...
Alternatively, she's not looking for you. She doesn't know you exist as a thing.
Is it absolutely certain that it was the angel that threw the rock? Or did the Doctor, having recently written that stuff, hastily wallpapered the room, gone and hid outside the window, thrown a rock and then fucked off?
Well, no, because if he was there then, he'd just go and find the TARDIS, wouldn't he?
Yeah, that's a good point.
End of episode.
But I like the theory. That is a good theory.
But I guess you never see who throws the rock, but I don't think there's anybody
It must
else
be the angel,
it
right?
Be.
Yeah. Must be. So why are these four or five angels just living in a house in London?
Why don't they just kill her, why don't they send her back in time right there and then? Why do they move around a couple of times in the background while she's fucking around?
All right, well, so I had a theory. I had this theory of why the angels are shot all the time. So we see a bunch of them, or four of them, in fact, off shot with the main character, the protagonist, not looking at them, but staying stationary. So my theory, when I was watching in 2007, is because we, as an audience, are looking at them, right? But then Emma, my partner, paid to that when we were watching it today. She's like, see that? No one's looking at them, not even us. And they're staying still. I was like, oh, fuck. But that would have been cool, right? That would have been a cool feature.
I wonder how they get through London without being seen.
I know. Oh, that's just ridiculous.
I mean,
there's no one looking at that church, for example.
They steal the TARDIS. How do they carry the TARDIS back to the house without someone seeing them?
They're so lightning quick. Sally looks away for a second and they're down the wall, across the street, and either side of the window that she's looking out of.
But then why do they need to even go to that window? Why don't they just go straight there? Or do they need someone to open the door for them first?
I don't remember this at all, but in that Soldier Angels episode... Aren't they also turned into stone just by virtue of CCTV being pointed at them?
Ooh.
Because what I'm thinking is, it's a police station. There must be even more cameras around there and more people looking around than anywhere else in London, which has like a record amount of CCTV cameras.
I think they're faking it on the camera because...
Oh.
I think the theory is that they can't move, but then it does come...
Well, see,
it comes
if,
out
if
of
I
the
remember
camera.
Correctly, Very the cool. image of
the
an
image
angel is an angel.
Yeah.
Having
so
said that, we
it.
Should absolutely put a moratorium on future angels because no one, whoever wrote this episode, who did write this episode?
Moffat wrote this episode. Yeah, that's my next
yeah,
point.
Moffat wrote this episode and will not have thought of...
The future of
yeah,
it,
yeah.
no.
So let's keep
this episode is canon for now and nothing else.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
I have a theory about why the angels didn't get her immediately.
Yeah.
Because they got the key to the TARDIS, but they don't know where the TARDIS is. The Doctor is presumably...
Listening. Oh.
They know that in the house someone will eventually come to read the wallpaper because the doctor's been in there doing his business, but they don't, they got the key, they don't know where the TARDIS is.
Oh, conceptual question. When they are turned to stone, do you think they're still aware? Are they still conscious?
They must be. Cause,
or do they take a break?
How? Otherwise, they have to make their decisions and move at the same time and do it all at once.
Wow, but they are crazy fast.
They are crazy fast.
And that helps me because that makes them more like there's a weakness there. They have to formulate the plans on the go, whereas if they were just sat there for ages, I'd be like, why don't you not come up with a better plan than this, guys?
Because so, I thought it was eerie at the end of the episode when the four angels are looking at each other. Like, I assumed they're all conscious yet immobile, trapped like that forever, essentially. I know that's scarier for me as a concept than they're completely unconscious during that, like their respective.
And that
dead.
Makes the ending of the episode, or rather for the angels, that makes it so much worse and actually more akin to what we experienced not too long ago, whereby the doctor has basically sentenced these four aliens to eternal torment just looking at each other.
If you were to cover the heads of three of those angels, presumably the next one could come back and, you know, start moving again.
How dumb is that, though, by the way?
No, you wouldn't do that.
No, but like, how dumb is it to just leave four angels, even if they're looking at each other, in some house? Very clearly, someone is going to enter that place, right? And they're going to go, oh, cool statues. I'm going to put one in this gallery and one in that gallery. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, the world is fucked.
Or I'm just going to turn the light off.
You can't kill a stone, but we could probably pulverize that shit.
Yeah, you totally
something.
Could, yeah.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, we could probably, you know, grout our fucking garden wall with it.
So should we move a little bit into the episode?
Yes, please, let's do that.
Let's go Sally Sparrow.
She was
let's
awesome.
Go character.
What's the actress's name?
Carey Mulligan.
I had completely forgotten that she was in
this. What is she in? Because I recognised her, but I couldn't place her.
Great Gatsby.
An Education.
An Education, yes. That's where my mind went as well.
Literally so much stuff. Is she Oscar nominated?
I think so, yeah. For An Education, right?
She's never out of work.
I thought she was really strong in this episode.
Yeah, she was.
Like, she seemed... Does she have... is it spoilers to go if... Like, does she ever come back? Because she seemed like the kind of character that was strong enough to come back.
I think that's a real shame, actually, because quite often if someone's helped him out in an episode, he kind of goes, oh, I'll give you a trip, I'll take you anywhere.
Yes, that's true.
And he never thanks her properly. She just gets a really brief, like, accidental meeting with him in the street, and that's the only closure she gets. I think that's a real shame.
You know why that
that's
is
a very nice point.
Because she takes her boyfriend's hand and the doctor's like, no poon here, I'm off.
Yes, that is.
But she never really loses.
Oh my god, 30 minutes into the recording and that's the first mention of poon.
Hey. But she never loses her cool the whole episode. She is very collected, and I like that. That was it's different, I suppose.
Carey, if you're listening, Rory's number is.
She's a 3D
character. What's she called? Yeah. Gorgeous girl. Yeah.
she has all the facets. She has depth, and she has, you know, agency and all those sort of things that female characters don't. Doctor
Who. Her and what's her Nightingale at the beginning seem like could be quite a good team. Obviously, if they weren't, but they seem like they could be.
Sparrow and Nightingale.
Yeah. The ITV joke was funny.
Yeah. You could almost see Moffat just sort of grinning to himself, going, yeah, I'm going to write this.
Rubbing butter on himself.
I immediately thought, is this a regular kind of joke that Doctor Who makes at ITV's expense?
What was this, genuine question, was this sort of a one-off Moffat episode? Because I seem to recall that Russ wrote the previous ones. Am I mistaken there?
Episodes what do you mean before this ones? Or just the previous
ones? Yeah, Cornell. We just had a Paul Cornell.
Oh, yeah, you're right. We had Paul Cornell. Yeah, yeah.
Cornell.
But no, that joke is written by someone who's going for the top showrunner job.
Yeah, very
see
true.
How much I hate ITV. I bathe in the blood of Sky executives.
That really killed it.
But more Sally Sparrow things. She, you know, strong enough character to carry the whole thing. We don't miss Tennant at all. Martha less so.
I thought just her facial acting was really good. She could say a lot without saying anything, really, which is cool.
There were so many moods that she had to in some way reflect. I think possibly my favourite one is when she's waiting for... Lawrence Nightingale, what a name. Lawrence Nightingale to remember where he's seen her before, and she's just like, it'll come to you.
Yeah.
Well, she had a similar moment with the, am I wearing any pants?
No.
It was just a nice, slow kind of...
My favourite Sally Sparrow moment was her flirting with...
Oh, that was so good. That was a meet cute. That was a meet cute and a half.
Fantastic. Yes, fantastic, but... Oh, he's such a bad actor.
Oh, I liked him.
Really? I loved old Shipton. I was not a fan of the acting of young Shipton.
I like
young
Shipton.
I like them both. I thought
he was super charming, but... Oh,
I just desperately wished I was that charming the whole time.
This is another dumb scene for me. She leaves the parking, whatever. Yeah, that sort of storage facility where all the cars and the TARDIS are housed.
Under the police station.
Under the police station. She leaves.
Yeah.
He turns around. Vroom. There are four stone statues in this room that were not there a second ago. And he doesn't freak at all. He just goes, well,
yeah, that surprised me too. I was like, why are you playing that so cool?
Well, I mean, he does actually.
I know you're pretty rad.
See, when I was looking at it, I think he seemed dumbfounded more than it was cool. He's like, all right, lads. Right? No, it wasn't like that. He was just.
I thought he seemed mildly surprised.
He was stony faced.
Okay.
More fucked up things over this is that. So he gets zapped back into 1969.
Yep.
And the Doctor finds him. And he's like, oh, I've got this message to deliver. It's going to take a long time. It's like, well, won't it for you too? Don't you also have to wait this long?
No, because the time machine gets sent back to 1969.
Yeah, but in the interim, whilst the message is being sent.
No, because it doesn't work that way.
Why does it work that way?
The TARDIS is going to appear because the whole thing is just circular and self-referential.
I'm fine with the idea, and we've had loads of circular.
It either comes back then or it never comes back. Like,
what, you mean the TARDIS?
Yeah.
But you see, to get to the point, they will also have had to have traversed the last 30 or 40 years or whatever.
Well, no, because the TARDIS comes back and it heads them off at the pass.
No, this is a super duper good point from the Rohrmeister. Yeah. Why the fuck? Yeah. Did
no.
Oh wait,
no, it's Nick.
Oh, no, sorry, no, from Nicolini. Sorry.
I had a good point too, but whatever.
No, this is a super good point. How does the TARDIS decide when it's going to reconvene
it's
with
on the
its
disc.
Mother?
No, it's on the disc.
The reconvene.
Oh, what's on the disc? What, like, to go to 1969?
Well, yeah, he's told the dude to program something into this DVD, which...
How the shit can the Doctor look at some dude who, for all he knows, is just a dude, and go, well... At some point in the future, close to quote-unquote present day, you're going to get into DVD publishing and you're going to tell someone to come back to this moment.
The only way this can work...
But he tells him... Sorry.
It can't work. It can't work because the only way this works is that he coaches him over the next 30 years as to what algorithms are, put this in this fucking disc. See, my problem is that... So the Doctor's met Billy Shipton. Said you've got to spend the next 30, 40 years of your life.
By the way, after which you're going to die.
After which you're going
to die. 38.
Right?
And how then does he know when he's going to die?
And you're going to deliver this message that it will circularly bring the TARDIS back, right? But that first trip, that first temporal trip, they have to do that together. Because they're also in the same time period. Logic doesn't...
It's not like they hitch their timelines together. They can still diverge.
Can't diverge because they have no method of divergence until Billy.
No, but that's my point. The Doctor
diverges via the TARDIS.
Exactly. And then they've written in this shitty loophole which says everyone else who's been sent back in time, sorry, you can't get on board the TARDIS because that would F up the universe.
He has to go the long way around because otherwise there'd be no one to put the message in the DVD.
But the first time round, they have to go with him.
No. Okay, check this out. MFers.
Someone draw a diagram.
So when Kathy Nightingale's grandson goes and Back to the Future delivers a letter to Sally Sparrow.
You mean Accountant Daniel Craig?
Yes.
That's exactly what I thought. Nice.
When he, in almost a reenactment of that Back to the Future scene, at the end of Back to the Future 2, right?
Yeah.
Where he goes like, oh, here's a letter, yada, yada, yada. Why couldn't the Doctor just have written a letter, quote unquote, or gotten someone else to write a letter? That is just delivered a little bit sooner.
Because Sally Sparrow remembers the DVD, see? It all feeds back into itself.
But he could just get a... Once he meets Shipton, he could just go, here, write something that only you will recognise, post this to yourself in the future, and then get yourself to take this key and put it in the thing that is in the place where you work anyway.
In this scenario, it's cause-effect in a circle. It just doesn't work. What I want to really know is, why does Billy Shipton get into publishing and then get into DVD publishing in order to achieve this
natural
goal.
Progression?
Like, that is not how you ever do this.
Now, see, I've got to say that it's the 60s, and it's not exactly like, "Hey guys, I've got this great idea for digital video discs." No one to
get. But he could have got into he could have got into TV. Like that's the logical thing to go for, right?
Yeah. Well, especially as he has to film the doctor having half a conversation.
Well, quite.
I'm going to say he comes in on the right. He's a right.
Oh,
right.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. That was very big in the late 60s, early 70s.
No one cares about this content.
Oh, another DVD question.
I thought that was
how can, what's his face? Lawrence Nightingale. How come he and all the quote unquote guys on the internet.
The egg forums.
How can they not have. I mean, he even says they are completely unrelated DVDs, but they're all published by the same company. Like there's the same producer, right? He says, "Oh, I spoke with the publisher."
Perhaps he
in
works
brackets of all 17 DVDs. Yeah. This is clearly
perhaps
the
perhaps he
red
actually works
thread,
in a manufacturing
right?
plant and put these in somehow there because that's where it'd have to go in, right?
He might have said
that's what she said.
He might have said he might have meant they are other than the publisher. They're seeming there's no other. Relation, you know.
It's too facile a connection. These are all DVDs.
Unless like, they all star Gwyneth Paltrow.
Well, they said they're unrelated DVDs, but, you know, surely they're at least united by her taste in DVDs, unless her taste in films is really diverse. I mean, they...
Also a very good point.
Maybe they are. Maybe they're just like...
Well, if she had the Back to the Future trilogy, for example.
some of them related already.
Well, it's just the first 17 discs of Will and Grace.
And how do you know that there isn't, like, an 18th DVD with an Easter egg?
Yeah, they might not have found it yet. There might have been a whole extra... Oh, no, the whole conversation...
But she only owns 17 DVDs.
Follow-up question. He goes, "Oh, the dudes on the internet and I, we've been trying to figure out what the second half of this conversation is." In brackets, I feel like... For a long time, because this is like a legend in DVD yeah. production, right? Mm. And then he goes, "Oh, I was just trying to figure out if all of the clips on all 17 DVDs are the same." Which feels like, aren't you going to notice that after one viewing?
Well, why did that entail having them all playing on 17 TV screens in his living room simultaneously?
That's like masturbation.
While he's out
material,
of the room half naked.
Numero uno.
Now, see, I picture yourself
naked jacking off to that.
Done. I interpreted that slightly differently, and not that he was trying to see if all 17 different clips were the, you know, the same, that he was checking multiple versions of the same DVD.
Oh, maybe so.
And whether there was extra. So, like, if there was a 20th anniversary of Driving Miss Daisy or some shit, you know, and whether there was a special...
That's a pretty
is that
good
what we
explanation
think,
for
Miss Sparrow would watch?
I have no idea. just chocolat over and over again.
I like, on the second viewing, by the way, it's a little detail that I noticed that I didn't pick up the first time, was that the shop that she owns with Lawrence Nightingale is Sparrow and Nightingale,
Rare books
and DVDs, which I completely missed the first time.
Which is a nice little
detail.
I like
that, because that made a little bit more sense.
Having said that, when I looked at their inventory, it was all stacked like they were records, and I was like, I would not be able to traverse this bookshop.
Maybe the bookshop was upstairs.
No, there were books. There were books in the, and where there would be CDs and DVDs. I was just like, spines out, guys. Literally, rule one.
They're only in their first year of this business. They haven't learned the trade yet.
They're going to fail.
Next episode, foreclosure.
Back to the DVD, the rare DVDs. Yeah, such a vintage technology. I freaking loved, what's his name? Banco?
Oh, the DVD shop owner.
Banto?
Bilbo Bagshot?
The guy
from space. I loved him. I loved how he's like scrutinizing this B action movie. He's just like, no, wait. I have to finish watching this one scene. And it's the shittest movie ever.
It is so, that guy is so genius. And his, why doesn't anyone go to the police? Because that's very Cornetto trilogy or something that's also hyper aware of the popular culture.
I've got a thing to say, which was, this is 2007 we're talking about.
Okay.
And she says, "I bet you talked to your fellow geek nerds about this on the internet, capital I, this crazy new technology." And we're watching this 9 years hence, and it's like, well,
but
we don't
talk
to people
off that
now. But she
seems like the kind of person who would see the internet that way, because she seems very disconnected from that culture, because she's the kind of person who is obviously interested in rare books and old houses that she likes to explore at night, which is really weird.
I fucking love this, the sentence or the quote, sad, it's happy, but for deep people.
Oh, that was good.
Oh, my God.
I thought if I needed a quote, I was going to use that.
Is that a Moffat-esque line? Was he that witty, that clever a writer later on?
hitherto no.
So is this his one moment? Did he just peak? Is that what happened?
No, he wrote Coupling. Coupling has its moments.
Did he write Coupling?
He wrote Coupling?
Yeah.
Wait.
Yeah. Exactly. He was the one sole writer of all four series of Coupling.
But this single sentence is never... that no other quotes have hit that height so far.
But this is another example of why this is the kind of strong character who seems like she could have played a larger part in this show.
I think that her schedule was busy. I think she's got Gatsby coming up. Maybe in 2007? Fucking never. Maybe I'm done here.
She's been in loads of stuff. She's been in Never Let Me Go. She was in Drive.
That's what it was. Yes.
Yeah. Right.
Inside Llewyn Davis.
I still haven't seen that. Oh, it's really good. Welcome to the Coen Brothers podcast.
Got another question. By reference to Matt Smith, so in the video that, I think the one video that we get to see of the Doctor and briefly Martha, thank goodness, just briefly, we have that very, very famous line. Let's just soundbite that for a second. Ka-ching.
People assume that time is a strict progression of cause to effect, but actually, from a non-linear, non-subjective viewpoint, it's more like a big ball of wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey stuff.
Is that the debut of that line?
Yeah.
Yes, it is. That's that one line that then inspired 98% of Matt Smith's performance. Is this where it started?
Well, I wondered if this was an ongoing thing that, you know, was mentioned. If it was like... never mind. I want to say like a leitmotif. Now, I wonder if it was a recurring line in Doctor Who or whether it was just a thing from this
episode. Well, Matt Smith is all about wibbly-wobbly.
Right.
Okay. And timey-wimey.
It's that kind of self-referential thing because people will like look at Doctor Who and go and pick it apart and go, oh, well, this would never have happened and here's a paradox and da-da-da-da. And they just address it and just throw it to one side and say, wibbly-wobbly timey-wimey.
Well, when we were worrying earlier...
Oh, nice one.
Yeah.
Okay.
When we were worrying earlier about what happened in the 60s, I had to suppress the urge to say wibbly-wobbly
timey-wimey. I didn't feel like it was right. Yeah.
Like, I mean, we're friends, but I would have gone for you.
Yeah,
yeah, so I don't know. That particular... How it informs Matt Smith is less clear because actually he's just that good physical actor and stuff.
I think this is Moffat essentially... setting out his idea of what the Doctor could be. I mean, I didn't realise, I haven't really, you can't really trace how the Doctor changes from writer to writer. But in this one, definitely, he's different from how he's been in the rest of the series. Frankly, I liked him a lot more in this mode.
He does say sorry.
Twice. He does.
Oh, yes.
Twice.
But it's not the, I'm sorry, I'm so sorry. It's...
very, very sorry.
There you go.
Yes, because when you look at them in that lens, they're different.
Wildly different. It's a new line.
I will ask you guys what this is about after
he
the podcast.
Says sorry
I'm
a
sure
lot.
Listeners know about this.
All of the time.
Okay. In a really deep way, like he's like, I'm sorry, but this is the way it has to be.
And for genuinely no reason whatsoever, we hate it.
Oh. Okay. Well, I liked it in this episode. Are we still progressing chronologically through this episode?
Oh, in no way.
I guess
in
we
no
could
way.
Say that the angels then appear, and I thought they were a damn good prop. I think I've probably seen like a screen cap of them here and there, but I thought they were really good. I loved the progression from the, you know, face covered to scary ass face kind of thing.
Well, there was more to it than that. There was, I'm peeping over.
Oh, yes.
Now I'm looking quite harmless, but I'm looking at you, and now suddenly I'm right up against you, but I'm still smiling.
It reminds me of a movie I saw as a child, which I've no idea what it was, but I saw like a few minutes of a movie.
This is
which involved
amazing.
Some shut up. It involved some dude in a church and a little angel and it moving, you know, an angel statue and it moving when he wasn't looking. It was, you know, possibly an inspiration for this. I've no idea. I don't know what it is. I've never found out what it was, but I'd love to see it again.
You think that's in the past? That was your first lifeline in the future, just before you got zapped back to 1987.
The way I've described it makes it sound the same, but it was actually very different.
All right, quick straw poll. If the angels caught you and you had to be zapped back into a particular time, what time would you pick? Go, Leon. Pick a year and a place, please.
Roaring 20s, New York. Oh, wait, can I change my mind?
No. You
wait, no! Wait, of all the co-hosts here, you need penicillin the most.
Rory.
Oh, last week I've had a really, really nice place. And a really nice place of sushi.
Time.
And some spritz.
Space,
and it was like...
Place, though.
We'll never see that again. Here, this very room, we had some great sushi. It was... Oh, my God.
Oh, it was true. Yeah, it's true. Oh, my God. Does that mean that we need to re-record the same Thunderbirds review over and over again?
Wouldn't that be amazing?
Ugh.
No, we just have to do it once. We live our lives again after that.
Marie, hit me.
I was going to go 20s too, but I was going to go Chicago.
Oh, well done. Can I choose one of my own?
There are only two times in the world. You can either pick 20s now. Or now.
Or last week.
Right. Or Hull and here.
The problem I have in answering this question is I'm married. So I'm going to say I'm going to go back to 2010, not to rewrite my marriage, but so that we can move to Canada and just avoid fucking Brexit and Trump and live happily ever after there, far from political machinations.
Canada?
Nick. Justin Trudeau.
Oh, right.
I'm going to go for, like, 80s Hong Kong. That seems Ooh, cool to me. Like, British era Hong Kong. I don't know. It seems... It's not really funny.
I was going to retcon myself to Renaissance era Italy, but also at the same time put myself in a very... in a family with good standing and a lot of money.
Yeah,
wealthy. Honestly, I'm surprised that no one went really far back in this episode. Like, no
10,000 BC! No one nicest went, like, cave on the block.
Because Nightingale went back to, what was it? She went back to the 20s or something, or was it earlier? But she didn't go very far back, you know, compared to these
27 hole. Yeah, 19.
Yeah, it's like no one went back to, like, fucking Jurassic era or anything.
We were just about to introduce 1920 hole.
1920 hole.
I mean, I'm just waiting in a field for a girl to fall out of the sky, my angel. Oh, look, there she is.
Was that or was that not massively stalkery? Are you going to stop following me? Don't think so. Charming and stalkery.
It is charming when you've got a nice northern accent.
And she's in the most scary thing that's ever happened to her hitherto. You know?
Hull.
Apologies to any listeners we have in Hull.
Yeah, move.
Move.
But isn't it fortuitous that Billy ends up in London? I mean, he could have ended up all over the place. Is there some limitation on how far the angels can throw you in terms of space
and
time?
Well, they threw him to the same place as the same angel had thrown the doctor to. It's just a massive coincidence it was the same angel.
I don't know if was it a coincidence? Because didn't they have some sort of tech that was, like, following timey-wimey stuff?
Did he, like, whip that together in, like, 5 seconds?
I don't know.
No, that's a super good point. So it feels like the Doctor and Martha have been there for a while,
yeah,
right?
Sort of made
She's
a
got a job and stuff.
Yeah, she works in a
oh,
shop.
Oh, yes, of course, yeah. Yes.
Has he got a job?
No.
Of course he doesn't.
Just wondering.
What could he do with his infinite intellect and godlike omnipresence? It's the 60s. Yes. Sorry. It really annoys me, that particular...
There's something I forgot to mention that we talked about earlier that is a bit of a plot hole. Salisbury walks out of the place, then she walks right back into the place under the police station where they lock up all the valuable evidence.
It's because she realises she has the key.
But she has the key to the TARDIS, she doesn't have the key to the police lockup.
But it's open because the angels haven't shut the door.
Is that how she got in?
I don't know.
I feel like when she was already inside that place, that's when she realised that, oh shit, the garage doors are ruined.
Oh, but Billy didn't shut the door because he got taken.
Sally's gone out the front. She walks back in the front of the police station, says, don't mind me, I'm a regular, I know my way around.
Exactly. Like,
maybe so.
Security set up in this place is so lackadaisical. Anyway.
There's cuts in it. Well, then, no, 2007, this is pre-crash and Tories. This is, there are no cuts.
Yeah, yeah. Did you see how many spare beds there were in that hospital before Jeremy Hunt fucking took over?
Yeah, no one immediately replaced Billy in that bed. Like, he was taken away quite efficiently as
He wasn't dying in a corridor.
How does he know exactly when he's going to die?
The doctor told him.
How does the doctor know exactly
when he's going to die? Because, what's her name, puts it in the dossier.
That's bullshit. Oh, I'm going to go with Marie's theory.
She killed him.
Marie's theory of wibbly wobbly, that's way, way more accurate.
This is the first time it's rained since 1969.
I'm going to say
in a country famous for being made out of rain.
Well, the rain is going up, so.
I love the old Billy scene. That was beautiful.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, I love the I love the observation that it was the same rain and, like, him turning us around, like, life is long and you're hot, all that kind of stuff. It was just sad and lovely, and, like, it's the idea that she'd met him for the first time, like, minutes ago. It was that was a great scene.
Yeah, maybe it's because of the contrast. Maybe it's because older Billy is so good an actor that I'm, like, just by sheer virtue of the difference between them, I feel like younger Billy is not a good actor.
You are on your own with this.
You leave
young Billy alone.
I think the contrast between the two actors, in just not so much in terms of I thought they were both good, but I felt like they played the character differently in a way that suggested the full life.
And maturity. Yeah, exactly. No, that's very true.
I read a fan theory earlier. Ooh. I wanted to share with you.
I'll go for it.
So, Billy says that he actually married a Sally, and someone's come up with a theory that Nightingale's named her daughter for her friend.
Oh my god, and I actually, just came. That was amazing. Oh my god.
Because when she does that slip of the tongue and she says she calls herself Sally. What's
Ship.
His name?
Ship.
Sorry, Shipton.
I want to say Shipman.
Yeah.
Shipton.
Sally Shit Hop.
And that was a great moment, by the way.
Yeah, which was lovely. But that's sort of a pre-telling of he actually did marry Sally Shipton. Yeah.
Really does it like work that. Time-wise,
I don't
though.
Know if the timelines work out. It could have been a granddaughter, maybe.
Oh, maybe. Maybe it's like, you know, Sally the second.
Yeah. But I thought that was a nice little... I don't know if it was
intended.
Oh, that's
a super nice theory.
That's a great theory.
Yeah. I really like that.
Yeah.
Keep it in the family.
Keep it.
Yeah. Did anybody really think it was necessary that Lawrence Nightingale and Sally got together at the end? Because I thought that was stupid.
No. That was not useful.
No.
But nothing in the episode suggested that
there was no foreshadowing for it. It was just weird.
Well, she did get to see his dick. I mean, was it just that?
I mean, by that, I'm going to hook up with everyone in the gym.
She seemed impressed could write shorthand.
A lot of dick.
And that's about it, really. And he wasn't, like, portrayed
but
as, like...
When you've been through something like that together, maybe...
That is... Yeah, it's a syndrome.
Yeah, but as Speed has told us, Speed the movie... That relationship is not going to last.
Maybe not. But I thought it would have been better if in the final showdown he hadn't made it and he'd been sent back into some awful time where he gets killed almost straight away.
And then all of a sudden it turns out he's her father.
You just want someone to have a really devastating life.
No, I just want the angels to
have more... Or he goes back, he's
more...
accidentally Himmler.
Accidentally?
More, like...
I'm trying to make this darker for him because apparently that's what he wants.
But I think he's...
What
I want
the angels to be scared. Area. And what I mean is, what happens to people who are, you know, I keep wanting to say taken by the angels, but got by the angels, like.
But I think the doctor says it's like the kindest way to kill someone. Like, they're not.
It is, but that's so in contrast to how scary they are.
Yeah, you
know, I feel like something should have been given to make it like this isn't necessarily going to be good for you. And I think the final showdown with the angels was good, but like it was a little anticlimactic at the same time. And I feel like maybe if Billy hadn't made it, that would have lent an extra weight to it. I actually kind of feel with this episode that it's almost like there are two good episodes combined into one. And like, one is a really powerful episode that's all about the angels and scary stuff they do, and one that's all with the timey-wimey stuff. And you could have gotten two stronger episodes, and I think like, they kind of dilute each other a little bit.
I think I agree, actually. I think it could have been stretched out. There's so many two-parters in that series, it could have been stretched out because it had the really strong cast. And you could have then seen a bit more of the Doctor and had a bit more time.
Because I almost felt there wasn't enough of the angels in it somehow, because all the time stuff distracted from it. And it's like that was... Both things were strong enough to carry their own episode, I thought.
How long is it until we get the next angel episode?
It's not till Matt Smith, so it's...
Oh, ages.
Yeah. Series 5?
It's not till that one that you...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So we don't ever see David Tennant, how he gets blasted back by the angels to the 60s thing.
Mm-mm.
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay, so I have more of a question. So the motive for the angels of picking up the TARDIS and such is to consume this...
They have
potential life energy.
Right. Yeah, I don't think that necessarily was clear.
Now, let's say... Okay, that's cool. But so you're four angels on... The feed on potential energy, and there are 7 billion people on this planet that have no idea who you are and what you are, and you could just eat your way around the world.
The thing is, they've got to be somewhere relatively isolated where...
like London.
They need to be somewhere relatively isolated where
you know, they are not going to be seen. If they go anywhere crowded, that's fucked for them. They can't move, so they need to be somewhere, you know, they can't necessarily go after a lot of people
at once. They can't move until 4 a.m, where just that split second and they can move, you know, thousands. Yeah.
Well, no one's looking at the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah. Oh, that's not a thing, is it?
Moratorium.
It is a thing. Sadly, that is a thing.
We cannot let that colour our review of this episode.
So bad.
In that sort of vein, I do really hate the last scene where they just show all of the statues in the world and none of them are angels with the hands of
the... I loved that.
I also
I'm with you, Marie.
But seriously, like, put yourselves in the position of, like, all the children watching this.
Yeah.
Who are then, after doing this, on their way to school the following morning...
Walk through the graveyard.
Not the graveyard, necessarily, but, like, just walk past any statue, anything, like a gargoyle upon a house.
Or that statue of Stalin they show near the end.
Wait, what?
What?
Well, it looked quite like stuff.
Okay. I gave a mannequin a shifty look earlier today, like, as I was walking past the shop. Actually, that ending, like, it probably would have freaked me out as a child, not so much now, but it reminded me a little bit of, sorry, spoilers, people, ending of Battlestar.
I would say it's not the same thing,
but it's a similar kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely.
I was wondering, surely when the angels were in the middle of London... up against the church, surely someone else was looking at them.
Yes, exactly. Opposite the fucking police station. Their job is to look at stuff.
Alternatively, it's a commentary on how much we look, but don't see.
Do you have to see them?
But that doesn't matter. Exactly. I think
the idea being that, you know, in London, the wasteland, that we don't actually look at anything around us.
Actually, in Oxford,
it's one of the most beautiful cities in the world, but actually, how often do you look up?
There's a really nice bit of graffiti on Broad Street that just says, look up.
And I've seen that.
I saw a statue on the top of a building that I'd never seen before. I was like, how fantastic.
I love stuff like that.
And if you hadn't, that thing would have murdered you.
Is it the guy that looks like he's going to jump off?
Yes.
Oh, that freaks me out every time I walk past it.
That's an installation. There are lots of those all around Europe, apparently.
Really?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Or someone told me that. I don't know.
There's a pissing boy on the bod.
There's a what now?
Tell him to stop.
There's a boy looking like he's taking a statue of a boy looking like he's taking a leak on the bod. Look for it.
Nice.
I will.
All right. Slightly less aroused now.
Yeah, we live in Oxford.
Okay.
I think the next significant moment in the episode is the chat between Doctor on the video and Sally. I just thought it was really satisfying. You'd seen bits of it.
I liked how the second time she sees a bit of that video in the DVD shop, her conversation also kind of lines up, but purely coincidentally. That's kind of fun.
Yeah,
but it's
nice.
Interesting how his DVD keeps unpausing itself, which, I don't know, it seemed like it meant something at the time and then didn't, I guess.
Seemed
like the Doctor was always manipulating that, but I guess he wasn't. It was just...
No, but like, imagine how frustrating that would have been if it had just been paused for the duration of that entire scene.
It was very effective that it kept jumping.
I mean, it must have sucked for those people that were, you know, renting Shallow Hal and it just... I'm worried you wanted to pause this thing.
We never explored how you actually find this DVD extra and like how they know for sure.
Lawrence does say there's a secret way on the menu.
I thought he was talking in generalities.
Presumably that applies to this Easter egg.
Because how do they know there's only 17?
That was my question earlier on. Yes, exactly. There could be a million of them. He has no idea.
Because he works in a video shop and he's probably tested
every single DVD ever made.
But also,
he's tested them to the full.
Okay, but also, if you put those 17 clips end to end, he does actually say this is end. There's no more here.
The whole thing was on every DVD.
Really?
I wondered that the first time around, and something about the second time around confirmed it for me.
When he picks the DVD, he doesn't say this is the one with all of it. He says this is the one with the best film quality.
They're not changing DVDs in between.
That was going to be my next question. Yeah, how do you know that he put them, or how is he sure that he put them in the right order? Because I thought it was just like 17 different clips that made up one interview.
That's only what I thought at first, but it was definitely all
But it wouldn't make sense. It would be too difficult.
No, it wouldn't be that difficult. If you ever stitched together 17, or you know,
but you don't know the podcast. Yeah, you don't know the order.
Put them in the wrong order. Exactly.
And he's only got half the conversation to go on. So
holy shit, we are realizing stuff in real time on this podcast.
No, because we're wrong. It was all on one DVD. These questions are irrelevant.
Let's burn it down.
This is such a versatile podcast.
I really liked, you've already talked about how strong Sally Sparrow is. And with the Doctor, she looks like she'd make the perfect companion. Maybe too good a companion, because we've had Martha, who needs to be cowed and be shunted off screen for the Doctor to preen his ego and be godlike. But Sally Sparrow wouldn't put up with that. She'd say, I'm clever, don't patronise me. Every episode, either the Doctor would have to grow, which, well, that would be awkward, or we could just carry on the way we are.
Loved how she was like, I'm clever and you're being patronising.
Yeah. Awesome. If you had to compare her to any one of the existing companions, whom would she most resemble?
Okay, not an actual... not an actual companion, but Madame du Pompadour.
But there's a romantic tension between Madame du Pompadour.
I know, but I think that same... I don't necessarily care who you are.
But Clara does that as well, I think.
Yeah, I think Clara is the best in art. But I think, if they're after a new companion, I think Carrie Mulligan should come back. It would make me very happy.
If she were to, I might watch that series.
Yes, everyone watch it.
I must say, you should watch the show anyway.
I should probably.
Someone should actually have to write it, like, well, though.
That's true. Yeah. Moffat, you're not doing anything, are you?
I must say, though, at the end, when she looks at the Doctor, then looks at scruffy Lawrence Nightingale, and then takes Lawrence's hand, like, does anyone buy that? Anyone buy that for a second?
Yeah, no,
like,
not at all. Oh. Answers to questions that have literally been posed for decades.
I'm sorry, actually plays him. I'm sure.
Or have a snog with this dude.
I mean, not that he was offering.
To be fair, he's not offering at that point.
But
he's on his way somewhere.
No, I mean, like, Mr. Nightingale. I mean, her choice is like, okay, either hang out with the doc, or like, basically, don't let him get out of your sight at this point, because how
just
often does the doctor come around?
Yeah.
Exactly. Or like, tag along, see whatever it was that he was going to with a bow and arrow?
Super incongruous.
Yeah. I was wondering if that was ever picked up in another episode, that what they were doing.
No, I don't think so. He's just being various gods throughout this series. This episode, apparently, he's Apollo.
Right. I also wonder why Lawrence is like, he seems to be much more mature at the end of the episode than he is during the rest of it. Like, during the episode, he's just standard obsessed with the DVD stuff. And,
well, because he
gets a girlfriend.
But then he's like, no, you've got to let things go at the end of the episode. Like,
maybe it's because all of the questions that he had to ask in life were actually answered by, you know, through his relationship
just
with
literally just, what does this thing mean?
Well, pretty much. Or maybe it's like, well, all the other questions I had, like, who was the real bad guy in Death Wish 3? Everything pales by comparison.
Or maybe he was just like, okay, you've been on this for a while, and our rare bookshop and DVD business has been failing. I really need to get your head out of your fucking ass and put these things with the spine facing out.
Now, you can see where Lawrence, his character, turns. He's stupid all throughout the episode. But then, right at the end, when the peril is maximum and you think they're going to be eaten alive by the angels, he's the one who suddenly is doing the explaining, being like, oh no, I get it, because the doctor said this, and they're looking at each other. Nice. And Carrie Mulligan has to look scared, and that's when I thought she might cap it off.
I thought that was clunky. That knowledge, understanding seemed to come way too quickly, with no effort. It was just like, oh, I suddenly see. Like...
Yeah, and he has been obsessing over these DVDs.
But not the angels.
Yeah, he seemed taken aback when the angels suddenly became a thing that was important.
He works in a DVD shop, though, so like all of the sci-fi tropes of the 50s and 60s and whatever, they will be very familiar to him.
This is not one of them,
Don't
is it?
Blink, but they keep repeating.
I know, like, alien bad guy, easy rules to follow.
No, he was too calm and collected with the delivering of this information. Basically,
given how
he was
terrified
a mechanism.
He was a few minutes earlier, when he's like, I can't do this!
Well, okay, I mean,
he's not
a
really
moment ago we were
character.
Talking about potential companions. He is not companion material, is he? But he is a very good, I feel like, almost vehicle for her to maneuver her way through this episode.
Yeah, I kind of get that.
if I'm ever perturbed by something, I might just give you a text ahead of time rather than let myself into your flat and start making a coffee. Just like a 1 or 2 in the morning. Just so you know, not just you as host, but podcast land, I'll just bell you up first. Just bell you up first.
Quote from my notes. What kind of a friend breaks into your house and makes you drink coffee at 1 a.m?
Also, she was wearing a weird top that looked a bit like it had a pinafore thing, and I thought she was a cleaning lady.
No one else has that note.
That was just
me. Crazy judgmental.
That's not judgmental. Like, it just looked like she was about to start cleaning the flat for a moment.
What, never?
What is that?
HMS Pinafore.
Oh.
My next small point is, to add to the overused Doctor Who tropes, the angels are as old as the universe.
Oh. Everything is as old as the universe. Yeah. Although, technically, that is true.
Yeah, we are all stardust. We are all golden. But what has the universe done lately?
That's happened a lot recently, though, as well, hasn't it? Like, on Who Back When, we've encountered that trope a lot.
Well, yes, in New Who, absolutely, where things are... The way they're because...
Not once in classic, as far as I recall.
No, because the reason that I could surmise is that... They've in New Who, they've overplayed the omnipresence of the Doctor. So for him to not understand something has to have been older than him or his race.
But he doesn't need to understand the angels.
It could have been more powerful.
Yeah, he does.
I know.
Yeah. Very good point.
Yeah. It could have been more powerful if he had no idea what the shit is.
It doesn't have to... Like, that just because he doesn't understand it doesn't need to be older than the Time Lords. It just has to be from a different part of the universe.
Absolutely. I agree, but I'm saying that's what the writers have done. They've written themselves into this box where he knows every... You know, he's so endlessly clever. Whereas Old Who, Classic Who... The Doc was endlessly clever, but he was constantly running up with shit that he didn't understand.
Right, I've got another discussion point.
All right, go for it.
Okay, so the angels have, quoting the Doctor, evolved the perfect defence mechanism, where in the presence of another living being, including an angel, they are quantum locked and cannot move.
Yes.
So how did they evolve this through presumably... procreation? Did they just learn how to do it in the dark with their eyes shut?
Could they fucking...
Basically, like... You know, it's like you close your eyes and think of Blighty.
I'd love it if an angel opened its eyes during sex and we had a freaking fucking angel statue.
Yes! Just scattered all over the country.
Oh my God.
I bet they're in the British Museum.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
Next question. Angels pointing at the light.
Oh yeah, that made no fucking sense. I don't know what the angels' powers are, but I don't know how they have the power to turn the light off.
Suddenly they have like these weird telekinetic powers.
Yeah,
they can...
It's not somehow, because it's not like they were in the positions before it was light out, so they didn't need to use that power. So there's just the power they have always had.
Right, but it's not like ever...
So I'm saying, they didn't... Like, it wasn't like they...
No, because then you would have them invading every building in London and just turning off the lights.
I said that earlier. You just fucking murdered the entire planet.
The telekinesis seems as incongruent as the throwing a stone. Because maybe they didn't throw a stone. Maybe they telekinetically lobbed a stone without picking it up. You know, it's equally irrelevant to what these... beings are.
Oh, but also,
another thing. So if it's dark, but I'm looking at you, I don't know that I'm looking at you.
But you can't see.
Yeah, but my eyes are fixed upon a thing and I can't recognise your shape.
But do you stay
quantum locked?
Well, no, because they said you've got to be, like, observed. You've got to be seen by another...
Okay, so
being.
mirrors work.
So, presumably, yeah.
Yeah, mirrors do work.
As long as someone is seeing them.
There was a mirror in this episode, and I kept thinking, oh, well, she's obviously going to take that mirror and put it in front of the angel, right? And I mean, Marie, you seem to have a very, very good idea of what happens in future angel episodes. Does that not actually happen at some point?
I don't think it does.
Really? That seems like the obvious thing.
Spec script.
Okay, topic ended. We have to write this shit.
If we all dressed like we were Puff Daddy from one of it, like in one of those like super shiny suits from that notorious BRG
video.
Do that
anyway.
Yeah, exactly. We'd be angel proof.
As long as they...
I just wanted to go back to...
This is going too far.
The whole why don't they kill everybody idea. I just think that, like, for the Daleks, that's their ultimate goal is to, like, wipe out everyone else. Mm. For the angels, that's not their motivation. They just need the power to survive. So they're not... They don't want, like, genocide. They just need to kill off... And if they can kill off as enough people in that house, then they're not going to go and invade London.
Well, in a way, wouldn't the Doctor...
Die? Oh, who knows?
That's never covered. But wouldn't the Doctor, who is so good a person, wouldn't he be doing the universe a service by just going, yeah, here, take my TARDIS? Because doesn't he basically say that if they take the TARDIS, they will have all the infinite power of, like, whatever, time, energy and shit that is inside the TARDIS? He doesn't say it will make them all powerful so that they can conquer the universe. Yeah. He basically says they will be able to sustain themselves forever.
But he also said it could turn the sun off.
Mm. No, but that's the...
Who cares about the sun?
We do.
Give them this, and the angels...
Who loves the sun?
Everyone. Well, no, he says that's what it has the potential to do. But you're right. Basically, this whole episode, people die because he...
The Doctor is a selfish bastard.
A selfish bastard.
If he just gave them the TARDIS, he'd be like, fine, I'm stuck in 1969 until it turns into 1970. And in the meantime, and forever, the angels... will never bother anyone again.
But how do we know that, really? We don't know what they're...
Because they have enough. Because, like Marie was saying, the motivation seems to be hunger-based or like, you know, survival-based. They have all the energy they'll ever need about potential and bullshit like that. I mean, my point was the reason that they might go, not necessarily kill everyone, but in the same way that we only kill a certain proportion of the cows. You know what I mean? Like, we do enough to sustain this. Why don't they just do that? Why don't they just kill enough to crack on?
How do the angels live when they're not being observed? I mean, if an angel is just on its own, it's satisfied, no one is observing it, does it just, like, chill out on the couch? You know? Like, what does it do?
It's in a onesie.
Watching Seinfeld.
I got a question. This is a question. This isn't a point. This is a question.
Can this be the last one?
I've got a couple of points after this. Right, so they put the golden disc, the suddenly glowing golden disc, in the slot, and the TARDIS dematerialises from around them, leaves them behind. Has that ever happened before? Because that really took me by surprise.
Yes, it has definitely happened before. Or possibly later.
It was very risky of him to assume that the angels were going to be stood in that...
He's got a dossier.
She gave him the account.
Oh, so she wrote that later on in the same folder?
She had like a whole year. She made a whole folder, presumably recounting everything she could remember. She'd obviously...
You have saved my life. You have brought me back from 1960. Take her in the TARDIS. Take her to where he is.
In Capaldi times, he gave that little girl, who was a total shit to everyone, he gave her a ride to the moon.
No. Yes. His worst things. Why did the weird little security system go, oh, there are unauthorized people. let's go for a little ride. Like, rather than, you need to get the fuck out. Like, right now.
No, because he actually says it's authorized. It detects the authorized disc.
That's fair enough. Okay, so why doesn't that because the disc has been manufactured for this specific purpose and the dossier has told him, why doesn't it go, hey guys, I know who you are, don't worry, we're going to dematerialize, these guys are going to look at each other, everything's cool.
Give him a little bit of a heads up.
Yeah.
Yeah, would be nice.
Yeah.
Because he's a dick.
Now the angels are listening.
I love him, but he's a bit of a dick.
Come to the dark side.
You have officially joined Who Back When.
You've got to hate the things you love.
Okay, so do you want my final point?
Final one.
Right.
This is the last one, dude.
Sally and Larry, they duck, they inch away, they fade to black. The peril is over. But now, presumably, the policemen investigate Sally over the disappearance of D.I. Shipton. She was the last person who saw him alive and turned her next year into a living hell.
Ooh.
I know, she's a white middle-class woman, so no.
I don't feel like... aren't policemen in the world of Doctor Who kind of idiots? I mean, they're klutzes, right?
Yeah.
In fact, from the very first episode of Doctor Who ever, there's a policeman walking past the junkyard where the Doctor's TARDIS is. From the very first, the very first clip of Doctor Who, you get to see a policeman. They've been idiots from the get-go. Even in the Peter Cushing days, they were idiots, right?
Okay.
Oh, hang on, wait, can we put a microphone on the audience?
Question the panel, and since having seen angels, have you gone to graveyards and seen the more elaborate statues and kind of always seen a weeping angel rather than just someone more?
No, but I only saw it yesterday, and next time I go to a graveyard, I will check in with you and let you know.
I often look at statues and think, yeah, I'd fuck that up.
That's terrible.
He especially likes the ones on horses. Do they have to be weeping?
Wait, hang on. What do the angels actually look like? Because we only get this sort of strobe effect view of them, right?
I think they all look like Ronnie Corbett.
Well, they...
Jesus Christ.
It's like we get the standard view of them is angelic form, right?
Well, do they look like statues when they're moving?
It's quite hard to look like a statue when you...
They still look like they're made of stone, or do they just turn to stone when they're not moving, if you see what I mean? Are they flesh when they're moving and then they're stone when they're not moving?
I remember there's a clip of an angel moving. I don't know if it was from this episode or one of the later ones.
It would be a later one.
Yeah, and she like just does turn her head ever slightly and you see it and it.
And it's like a stone thing.
So it's stony.
Yeah, it doesn't look flat.
But for this one, they're moving the TARDIS back and forth.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
But we don't see it when the light's on and off, though.
Wait. So in that episode, when they are moving, do they look more like the Buffy the Vampire Slayer vampires, or do they look like angels when they're moving?
I think it's just what you've seen, a stone angel, and just the head like spins around really slowly. Which is not...
Are you talking about the contrast how they look angelic at first and then they look demonic by the time they're about to take you out?
Exactly, and in my mind I'm thinking, that's not even it. Like, that's like a stopover between what we normally see and what they actually look like.
Like, they all look like Greg Rosetsky.
Who?
That's tennis joke.
I love the pointy teeth, but it's sad that they don't use them for anything. But they're so scary, the pointy teeth, but you're never going to be bitten by them. As far as we know, I don't know how exactly they send you back in time, but they presumably don't bite you.
I think they just have to touch you, don't they?
It would seem that way. They seem like they're going to really grab you, but you don't really know.
That's just the manifestation of their... when they're quantum locked, because they could all look like Gary Barlow. We have no idea.
But I suppose it looks like they're caught in the middle of an action of getting you, and, you know, it's like a freeze frame of hell.
Exactly.
Not unlike Gary Barlow.
Yeah.
Still, it's going to Robbie Williams.
True.
Yes! Oh my god, why did I miss that?
Oh, I'm such a twat.
Oh.
Reviews. On my right, let's do this counterclockwise. Ka-ching, okay, Rawmeister.
All right, so, I mean, like I said, I thought this was a very strong episode. I think there are ways in which it could have been made stronger, in particular the final showdown, I think, could have had a bit more oomph. But on the whole, it was a fucking brilliant episode. So I'm going to give it a... I'm going to give it a 4.9.
Wow.
Okay, so again, it's one of my favourite episodes as well. And I do think it stood the test of time. It's lived up to it this time round. I don't believe anything can ever score 5 because there's always room to improve. But I'm going to go for maybe a 4.7.
Right. I'm going to say that this episode is deservedly considered among the best. It's not flawless by any means. You've got a few plot holes on closer inspection. The final showdown with the angels is over quite quickly. I remembered it as being more climactic than it was. And Larry's fairly dull. But Kerry Mulligan puts in a great performance. So does Tennant in his didactic role. And any of the flaws we mentioned are minor quibbles, more than compensated for by the excellent writing, acting and direction. So, minus 0.1 for quibbles. Minus 0.1 for the apostrophe in DVDs on the shop frontage.
Hey!
4.8. Nice!
Okay, well, I'm going to go for the emotional part. This weird single standalone episode that doesn't, or at least at the time, didn't necessarily fit with anything in Doctor Who was my way of communicating to my outside non-Whovians my love of Who. I was able to introduce it, and we'll get to this, definitely listen to the bonus podcast, but it was a way in. On further reflection, it's probably not representative of my love of Who and all the things, you know, having gone through the classics, doing those other things. It is just this awesome story, great concept. Absolutely, does it have foibles? But it has foibles, but not every concept is foolproof. It can't be waterproof, watertight. I'm going to go 4.9. You know, 4.9 for how much impact it's had on my life hitherto. I'm not sure a single episode of any series has had this much impact.
Wow.
And the point one is for, as Marie said, nothing gets 5. Because I believe in the fucking future.
Okie dokie. Well, I'm going to start off by saying I'm so incredibly pleased that I misremembered Blink being an entirely different Weeping Angels episode, because I got to experience this once again for Reaping the very first Angels. Time. Sorry. The Reaping Angels?
The Wangels.
I love this episode. I think it's amazing on so many levels. In fact, I wonder if there's a single character in this entire episode that I could have done without. And most often, that's sort of where I start when I think, how would I rate this episode? Like, oh, those 3 out of 7 characters, I could have happily done without them, or they were poorly written or whatever. But in this case, everyone is well written, at the very least, for like within their own context. Fantastic introduction to a new foe. I'm okay with the Doctor not having been in this one properly. I'm giving this a 4.7.
Boom. Lowest rating.
The lowest rating is it's still an incredibly high rating.
Yeah.
Bing bong, and now for your listening pleasure, drum roll please. First out of the gate, it's JD. And then we have I hesitate to call him or her, a mystery guest. You may already have guessed, but whatever. Before these future past recording insertions, just a quick sorry. I'm so sorry, because a lot of time had passed between these recordings, so there's a tiny bit of overlap in discussion points. You love it nonetheless. So actually, that's not the sorry. Really, though, sorry for the audio quality, because these were recorded on Skype, and the connection was on a few occasions less than ideal. Did I mention you'll love it nonetheless, though? I did, and you will. I have no doubt. Okay, bing bong.
Everyone knows that I am a great fan of Doctor Who, and there have been within Doctor Who a number of incredibly good stories. In New Who, there have been some amazing stories. Turn Left, Heaven Sent, Dalek, the Parting of the Ways. And you have stories which are undeniably abysmal, such as Love and Monsters and Fear Her, which is as a back-to-back set of episodes consist of possibly the two worst back-to-back episodes until Daleks in Manhattan. But that aside, Blink is one of those episodes which people think they have to like, because 90% of people who watch Doctor Who really liked it. But like we discussed when we reviewed Scapegoat, everyone is allowed their own opinions.
Very true.
And different opinions should certainly be shared. The second half of Blink, the last 20 minutes or 25 minutes, are superb. They are really, really superb. Carrie Mulligan as Sally Sparrow is the companion that really should have been. She's significantly better companion than Freema Agyeman. She is a significantly better companion than the second sainted Clara Oswald. But the first half isn't that good. It contains Billy Shipton, who is the police officer, who is possibly the worst police officer in television history.
Oh, so glad that you agree with me on this. Okay, sorry, carry on.
I've obviously not heard your review of this. So,
I was alone in saying that. I was completely alone in saying that.
Billy Shipton is awful. But saying that, it is the best that the Weeping Angels have ever been in Doctor Who. Every other appearance will chip away at their fear, at how scary they are, until it reaches the nadir of Angels Take Manhattan, which, as a story, I quite like.
Yeah.
But contains a Weeping Angel Statue of Liberty, which makes about as much sense as anything else in that episode. Carrie Mulligan, good. Weeping Angels, good. Billy Shipton, abysmal. Storyline, okay. Carrie Mulligan's sidekick in it, not brilliant. Ideas, good. First half, slow. Second half, good. You see, most people say that this is the best episode of Doctor Who ever made. It isn't. It can't be.
No, I agree with you on that. It's a really good episode, though, man. But okay, sorry, carry on. What's your rating?
My rating would put it around about a 4. I think it's not even the best episode of this season.
But you still give it a 4. A 4 is a spectacular
But
rating.
The problem is, I disagree with practically everyone in Doctor Who fandom, because I have not rated this a 4.9 or a 5.
Okay.
This is, by, I think, the Doctor Who reference guide, I'd have to double check, or the Doctor Who ratings guide, and by the last fan poll that was done, the single best episode of Doctor Who ever. Not New Who.
What?
This is the single best episode of Doctor Who ever.
The Doctor's hardly in it.
Which takes away... Yeah, but then again, I would give 10 left, which the Doctor is hardly in, a 4.8.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, I don't think it's a Doctor Light, which is a problem. Admittedly, the last Doctor Light episode, which was Love and Monsters, you know, gets a minus 10. You know, you've got the worst episode there. And this other Dr. Light one is meant to be the best, but the problem is it's not as good as everyone thought it is. Saying that, it's probably one of the best things Moffat has ever done, but even he's had better stories. So I'm sorry, it's not as good as everyone thinks, in my opinion, but if you like it, that's the important thing.
Nice note to end on, but I have one more question, and that is a slight spoiler to the bonus episode that we absolutely have to make at some point, in the not-too-distant future, which is the how would you introduce a non-Whovian to Doctor Who? Would this be a candidate for you?
No. We have a problem with it being a candidate for introducing a non-Whovian to Doctor Who.
Okay. And that is the lack of the Doctor.
You've already said it.
It's very Doctor Light.
The Doctor. It's a very good science fiction story. It's a very good time travel story. It would make a brilliant episode of The Twilight Zone or The Outer Limits.
Yeah, definitely. That's a super good point. I can't believe we didn't say that.
It's not the best episode of Doctor Who. You know, you have episodes like Dalek. You have episodes like Genesis of the Daleks. Sorry to pick on the Daleks. You know, you have episodes which, if you go back and look at, you know, one from each era, which I did with my husband.
Yeah.
You have episodes like Caves of Androzani.
Which, by the way, is why you absolutely have to be on that bonus episode, because that is the most amazing approach to introducing Doctor Who to someone I have ever heard of.
And, you know, you have some stupendous stories. Admittedly, we had difficulty getting a Colin Baker one, but... sorry, Colin, if I could have given one of your hundreds of amazing audiobooks, which you have done, your episodes were a bit shit. It's not your fault. But yeah, you know, I'm sorry. Blink is not even my favourite David Tennant.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining the Blink episode, dude. You know what this means, by the way? Full house. All we need is Flapjack. Bing bong, Future Punkin here. Guess what? So you've already heard from, pretty much all of us, and you've heard from JD, but here's a tiny little bit of trivia that about Who Back When that you may or may not be privy to. This is, if you disregard the Cushings and if you disregard the comic books, way more than 100th Who Back When episode, but the 100th canonical Who review that we are putting out. And for that reason, we are bringing out the big guns. So with me on Skype right now is the one and only co-founder of Who Back When. It is Flapjack.
It's been such a long time. I only answer to the Flap Monster these days.
Flap Monster. I like it.
The Flap Monster. Yeah, I believe it is an improvement on your original.
Can I still call you Flappy? I mean, we are friends.
For old time's sake, Leo. And I'm not calling you Ponkin. Screw you.
What? Like, there are a few people in podcast land who just went like, who's this Leon guy? Anyway, so first off, did you like it? Did you not like it?
What, Blink?
Yes.
You're seriously asking me, did I like Blink?
Yeah, well, I'm assuming that the answer is that you liked it.
Okay, I do have reservations.
Okay.
And I will briefly tell you about those reservations.
Okay.
But I love that type of Doctor Who episode, which really gets to down to something fundamentally human. So the concept of not being able to blink. I mean, as a child, if somebody told me to start thinking about blinking, it was a nightmare. To not blink. So when you are being confronted by like a stone angel, I can imagine the fear. I really feel the fear of the stone angel. Actually, I think they're the most frightening characters in Doctor Who. Bold statement, I know.
A very bold statement. So, wait, hang on. So are they just the most frightening, or are they in fact your favorite Doctor Who foe?
I wouldn't go as far as favorite. But they've got that sort of...
most accomplished in their own sphere, maybe, in some way?
Yeah, yeah. Best in class. Because, I mean, as the Doctor says in this episode, they kill you in the kindest way possible.
Yeah.
You do actually get to live a life. But it's the approach of them and the way they kill you, just that you cannot blink. that you have to keep an eye on.
And not just that, I mean, like, you get to live a life, but during that life, you get to think about, like, all of your loved ones who have no idea where you've gone.
Mm. There is also that. Although you can write letters on walls and stuff, and that helps, I think.
So in the we obviously sat down and recorded like a couple of hours of audio footage just talking about Blink, and obviously lots of things came up in this, and one of the theories was, why does no one like invest in Microsoft, for example? Like, they get sent back in time, why don't, now they know exactly what's going to happen, why don't they bet on something or invest correctly now that they have all this knowledge?
So the policeman.
Yeah.
His whole life, his entire life was dedicated to getting a message to the doctor or to, what was her name, Sally? I forget.
Or was it because he remembered, like, he was sent back to the 60s or whenever it was, and he was thinking, like, oh, wait, hang on, what's really big where I'm from? DVDs. Yeah, I'm gonna do something that will get me to DVD publishing.
Yeah, which is not that great a world, as we've both experienced.
I mean, publishing is. No, publishing is not.
And, you know, for not very much money, why didn't he move into Microsoft? I mean, just get into the early stuff. This guy was insanely stupid. Ridiculous.
Which is way too loyal to the doctor.
So, just getting to problems. I know we haven't got very much time here. You know how the doctor tricks everybody at the end by he tricks the angels by getting them to all look at each other at once, and, you know, they're fucked because they've been seen by each other.
Yeah, I have a feeling I know where you're getting with this, but okay, go for it.
For fuck's sake, they see each other all the time. Like, they're ever doing a group attack of any kind. As we see in this episode, frequently, they are attacking as a group.
It might just be one at a time, dude.
It's not one at a time. I checked it out. I actually just did a little thing before this podcast to check. They do attack all at once. And oh my God, brother, yes, they do. I even made a note.
Did you just call him brother?
It's around 37 minutes.
Jack is Skyping you from North London, by the way.
Check it out. 37 minutes. They are all attacking at once.
Okay, a screenshot on whobackwhen.com. That may or may not corroborate your story, Flappy.
Oh, no, it very much will. It very much will.
Okay, excellent.
Oh, and one more thing. When he's speaking to Sally, or whatever her name is.
Sally Sparrow, yeah.
It is Sally Sparrow. Man, yeah. My memory isn't actually as bad as I thought it was. So there's that little sequence in it where he's explaining how he knows what she's about to say next. And he says to her, to explain it, look to your left.
I know, I made this exact point.
How does he know?
How the shit does he know that? Okay, so the other people in the room, when we sat down to record this, they were saying, yeah, but she made meticulous notes afterwards, put everything in that shitty binder of hers, and then gave it to the doctor. Mm-mm. No, I don't buy it either.
Absolute bollocks. They were in a rush. He wrote that shit. Like, I guess they did have a little five-year intervening period to make more notes.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
But it's still not going to suffice. And also, like, just the thing that he wrote on the wall.
No.
Like the thing where he wrote on the wall, like, oh, duck now, yada, yada, yada. Does that mean that at first she experienced that without him having written it, got hit on the head with a stone or something? And then, like, oh, actually, you need to write this down. Basically, it's Bill and Ted. It's like, oh, that was jolly nice of us.
So, yeah, he would have had to have write down her whole story from start to finish in order to know. It just doesn't make any sense. She wouldn't have written that down in a journal to the doctor. It's just, I suppose it's possible, but it's not feasible. And that's my problem.
Yeah, that's the thing. I reckon she may very well have sat down to write it all for him, but it wouldn't have been detailed enough. But what really pisses me off even more than that is, then she actually gets to meet the doctor. She just gives him the binder and goes, well, I'm going to go bone this dude now. And that's it. Like, I'm not even remotely curious about what you're up for.
He had a thing that he was doing.
Well, fucking give up your rare books and used DVDs shop and go after the doctor who has clearly something way more exciting going on.
Yeah, I mean, and pretty urgent, yeah. To be fair. And he did pretty well, I thought, to stop for as long as he did, given that shit seemed to be really going down.
Yeah, why was he not going, wait, hang on, how do you know all these things? How do you know who I am?
Although, as a time traveler, that happens to him a lot. You know, like...
That's probably true, actually.
Meeting me too early, meeting me too late, all of that kind of stuff. It's hard to keep track.
That's probably very true.
Even with his huge Gallifreyan brain. And just one more thing. So you know the most famous line probably in modern Who? I think, do you know the one I'm referring to?
Yeah, people think of time as a linear thing, but it's really just a big ball of wibbly-wobbly timey-wimey stuff.
So just before that, she says, please don't patronise me. I'm clever and I'm listening. Or something to that effect.
Okay. Yeah.
And then he says the most patronising thing ever. Wibbly wobbly timey wimey.
I'm patting her on the head. Oh, well done, Sally. You understand now.
Why is she after that not just like, fuck you? it's not like the Doctor's incapable of explaining time. He's a Time Lord. It's not like he fucked up. It was like, how can I explain this to a 2-year-old?
Picture a ball of yarn.
Yeah, but it's nice to see that the Doctor is still somewhat a cunt. Because a lot of people's problem with David Tennant is that it does become a bit of a soap opera. It becomes a little bit of a love interest, a love story. And
the second the love interest disappears, it becomes a story of unrequited love.
Yeah, which is not real Doctor Who.
No, it doesn't feel like it.
It doesn't feel like... It's still great TV, but it's not great Doctor Who.
No, it's not for the, oh, who gives a shit about Martha Jones shtick that we tune in to Doctor Who every week.
Exactly. And which is why I'm so happy Capaldi has come in.
It's always coming back to Capaldi.
Just because of his look. Just the look alone is enough.
I should mention at this point that Jack is not wearing a shirt.
How'd you like the six-pack, Leon? What do you reckon?
Wow, that's...
It's really come along.
It'll take a while for me to forget that.
Good stuff.
So if you... Is there anything about Blink that you haven't said that you absolutely want to vent and immortalize in the annals of Who Back When?
Meh. I would, despite everything I've said, like to say it is one of my favorite episodes. Because Doctor Who is at its best when it's elemental and elementally human. So that fear that everyone has of blinking, or of not being allowed to blink.
I feel like you're really obsessed with this whole you're not allowed to blink thing.
Well, as a child, I remember from the age of about 4 to 10, I was really obsessed with blinking. Maybe that was just me.
Wait, what? You have to provide some context for that statement.
God, I really hope somebody doesn't tell me to blink, because then I'm going to be thinking about blinking. And then I won't be able to stop blinking. I'm sure there are viewers out there or listeners out there who will be able to, you know...
Stop blinking?
There must be someone else out there. Give me that at least.
Yeah, sure. No, that's very possible. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, possible, Jack. Yeah.
Well done, buddy. Well done. So the reason that JD is not tremendously fond of this is that, I hope I'm not misremembering this now or, you know, misparaphrasing him, but...
That might be more fun. Yeah, go on.
As far as I recall, sorry, Judy, for context here, by the way, we recorded the Blink episode about a month ago, minimum. This is a very Doctor Light episode. I mean, the Doctor is hardly in it.
Yeah.
That being said, it's a great sci-fi story, but is it really Doctor Who?
Is it a little bit like a 60s episode where... Maybe David Tennant's gone on holiday. And they were like, Dave, record 2 scenes. So you'll have one where you're making that video and one where you just run in at the end and be like, oh, yeah, I'll take those papers. Nice one.
That was Dave on his way to his holiday. Give me the binder. I've got a plane to catch.
Holy fuck, I've booked a plane today.
going to Mallorca.
Don't worry. We'll cut it down to like 20 minutes, maybe like 5 minutes of actual footage. And then you can just fuck off. We'll do the rest. Was it one of those? I mean, the Hartnells, they had so many of those.
Yeah, but they were like one-off episodes or, you know, two or three-off episodes in a whole arc.
Yeah, yeah, that is true. Because there were a few Dr. Light episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really kind of like them. I think they're a nice break from the Doctor in a way.
Well, it's not so much that. It's just that the Doctor's aura is so huge, it still infects the episode. So, because David Tennant in particular is such an enormous character, that even the merest mention of him makes it feel like a Doctor Who episode.
That's true.
I disagree. I don't think it doesn't feel like a Doctor Who episode. It's a great Doctor Who episode.
I tend to agree with you. I think it's a fantastic episode, regardless of how much of the Doctor we get to see. And it is still Doctor Who. Okay, so I have got two questions for you.
Uh-huh.
Number one, because this is something we're going to be doing in an upcoming bonus episode, the topic of which will be, how do you introduce a non-Whovian to Doctor Who? Would you nominate this as a good starting point?
I think so.
Okay, why is that?
Because I think it would have the potential to terrify them.
But Doctor Who isn't necessarily a horror show.
Yeah, but Doctor Who requires horror. What Doctor Who is for me is it's a perfect mix between horror as well as the sort of pathos. You have he's a lovely guy and he has lovely intentions most of the time, but he's also like this warlike character.
Oh, very much so.
So what you need
But you
is,
didn't get that in this episode.
No, you don't. But what I'm saying is that is the overarching theme of the show. So you should have some horror in the show, but you should equally have some woolly liberal Doctor Who. I mean, it's...
woolly liberal Doctor Who. Okay.
So the fact that this episode is like a fear episode, it does show one part of Doctor Who. I would recommend showing somebody this alongside a sort of more lighthearted, maybe like an Ood-based thing.
Oh, interesting. Where,
yeah, I think maybe this and an Ood episode. You know, like the ones with Catherine Tate. I know you don't like Catherine.
Yeah, no. Dude, you know what? Save it for the bonus episode.
David Tennant is commercial Doctor Who.
Definitely.
And that is the most accessible stuff.
Okay. Question number two, dude.
Yeah.
On a scale from 0.0 to 5.0, what would you give Blink?
I would give Blink a... I'm going to give it a 4.6.
That is a high score.
That is a high score. Because as I said to you, it is one of my favourite Doctor Who episodes. It's riddled. Like, I've made notes and shit, man.
I can see. He's holding up notes, ladies and gentlemen.
Holding up some, like, well, to be one tiny page of notes.
Yeah.
But there are some flaws. A lot of this doesn't work. But it's art, man. It doesn't need to work. It's a fucking rollicking ride. 4.6, and I stand by that.
Well done. Very Thanks. Good. An excellent mini. I've really missed you. Podcast Land has really missed you as well. I'm sorry, I'm speaking for you, Podcast Land, but I know that you've missed Flappy. Come back at some point, please.
I don't know if you've explained to Podcast Land, but actually it was you that moved cities, which meant we couldn't do this anymore.
That is true, yeah.
Yeah, so, like,
we
please
used to
do practically
be neighbours in North London.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway. 4.6. Anyway, I want to hear your mark.
I can't remember what I gave it. I gave it, like, very, very close to it.
Okay.
I think it's a fantastic episode, and you'll hear it very soon. I'm dropping it in a couple of days.
All right, cool. I eagerly wait for it.
Do you want to say goodbye to Podcast Land?
Yeah, I'm trying to construct a way of saying goodbye in a befitting manner. I guess Podcast Land, I'll see you on the flap side.
And I just came. Fantastic. Well done. Listener minis. Kablamo, and we have two listener minis, the latter of which is a live listener mini coming right up, ladies and gents of podcast land. First off, though, we have one from Trenton Bless. Oh, yeah, Trenton is back.
How you doing, Trenton? It's nice to see your new Who.
Yes, welcome to new Who, buddy. Okay, Rawmeister, take us away.
Right. While I consider Blink to be one of the best of Tennant, I don't see why it's one of the ones we as a fandom recommend for newcomers to the show to watch first. I mean, why choose a Dr. Light episode for that high of an honour? The Doctor, the one that everyone comes to see, is barely in it. But the villains, the Weeping Angels, are quite scary and did have some great moments in this. Of course, we have Sally Sparrow and the rest of the cast in this too, so maybe that's why.
So what makes this one so classic? I have no clue. It's Dr. Light. It's cast, it's perfect. Though sometimes I can't remember anything except the latter half of this episode. Another thing about this one that I like is Stephen Moffat was at his best here. But when I compare it to other good Moffat classics like Heaven Sent, you'll get to that, and the Empty Child 2-parter, I prefer those over this one.
Now, what makes it overrated in my eyes? It's a Tennant episode, and a good chunk of the fandom believes he is the best Doctor. After looking back on his era, I realised it wasn't as great as everyone makes it out to be. Wait until we get to the end of time review. Okay. Heck, I'd rate Chris Eccleston's era higher than Tennant's.
So overall, what do I think of Blink? Well, it's not a classic. It just isn't. It's good, sure, but I don't think it gets the honour of being the flag bearer for newcomers. Episodes like Rose should have that. Rose is also one of those Doctor Light episodes, but I feel that they're better executed than this one. And for all the Tennant fangirls and fanboys who are going to curse me until the end of time itself for that, for what I said about the 10th Doctor, I don't really care. Honestly, how can you defend Fear Her or the end of time? No, we'll get to that.
So even though I don't consider Blink a classic, Trenton concludes, it's still good enough to get a 3.8 from me. Holy smokes.
Oh, it's nice to see some diversity.
Yeah, that's a fantastic mini review. Actually, we didn't leave that much out of this one this time around. Well done, Trenton, for sticking slightly closer to the 250 word mark.
Would you look at that? A natural mini review.
There's one. There's one really, really good point here, actually, and one that I feel like we're probably going to revisit in our bonus episode, the one that we mentioned at the start of this, the how do you introduce people to Doctor Who? He says, why choose a Doctor Light episode for that high of an honour?
I mean, I think I alluded that right at the top of this podcast.
Oh, yeah?
And the idea of how you get people in and whether this is necessarily what you might call a Doctor episode. We'll get to that in the bonus, in the bonus ep, and what the best way to introduce people to the Doctor is. But we'll also revisit in our Tennant retrospective once we get there.
Trenton, thank you for sending this in, ladies and gentlemen of podcast land. Okay, first off, if you want to follow Trenton Bless on Twitter, you can. He is at Trenton Bless. That is Bless with two S's. And for people in the online version of podcast land, if you did send something in, I did put this on Facebook earlier today. I'm really sorry if you sent something in and we didn't read it out loud on the show. There were some technical difficulties and that fucking contact form on the website simply does not work properly. So in future, please do send your mini reviews to whobackwhen@gmail.com. We do, however, have a live in-studio, holy smokes, a very first on Who Back When mini review from Jimbo.
A Jimmy review.
A Jimmy review. Oh my God, that's the best. Jimbo says,
so, the Doctor hardly features, but it still ends up being, I said the best, but I think actually maybe it's one of the best of New Who. It's a great self-contained story that grabs you from the start, has a central character that you left hoping will make a comeback. In fact, I think she would make a bloody good amazing companion. And there's a monster in it that for once is genuinely scary. It doesn't look like it was cobbled together with some plastic bags and gaffer tape. It's not a bin that's just trying to eat people. And it is actually a very funny episode. And it's not just through little slapstick things or just crap writing that is trying to be funny and fall flat. It's just generally funny because there's good dialogue and there is good acting to back it up. I think all in all, it's a pretty fantastic episode. I didn't originally give it a rating, but I think I would go for a nice round 4.6.
Very good rating. Yay! Hey, congratulations. First live rendition of a mini review. Nice one. Are you on Twitter, perchance, if anyone has anything to say about your mini review?
They could tweet, but I would never see it. I don't use it.
So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Don't follow Jimbo on Twitter.
No.
Or you could, but
I just feel like a meme stalk.
At Jim. That's according to Jim. The Jim Belushi.
Okie dokie. I think that pretty much wraps up this episode. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us. Please do follow us on Twitter. To my right is...
Oh, shit. At Retro Metronome.
Bada bing, bada boom. That is the Rawmeister. To his right is Marie. Thank you so much for joining Who Back When. Welcome. Welcome to the team.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Are you on Twitter, perchance?
No.
Would you like people to follow you on social media of some description?
Or in real life?
Just in real life. Follow you. Yeah, just form an order with you.
Fantastic. So if you see Marie on the street, just head on over.
She's about yay high.
She looks like this picture I'm holding up.
Yeah. To your right is...
Drew Back When!
I am fan of Drew Back When, because it sounds like Who Back When!
Hey. Currently sitting in the audience position is Nicolele. Shall we mix it up? Here's a soundbite of Drew and me singing how you spell that.
N-I-K-U-L-E-L-E!
It's the rap. The rap is the best iteration.
It took more than a minute. We're not doing that again. And I am at Ponkin. Here's a soundbite of JD singing how you spell that.
P-O-N-K-E-N, Ponkin.
Thanks, JD. Next time on New Who, we are encountering...
Derek Jacobi and the supporting cast.
In, what's the episode called?
Utopia!
Goddamn right it is! Part one of a three-parter. Absolutely amazing. Future Ponkin, help me out. What's the next Audio Who review? Bing bong, the next Audio Who review is The Cannibalists. Bing bong. Thanks, future me. And the next Classic Who review is...
The Dominators.
Bing bong. Actually, our Dominators review dropped a week ago. The next Classic review will be of The Mind Robber. Bing bong. Nice one. Thank you again for listening. Catch you in the next one. Rock on, be right next to each other, and cha-chow.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Every time we say goodbye... I wonder why a little.
Kablamo! Did you enjoy the show? Then please do what the cosmos compels you to and spread the gospel of Who Back When. Tell your friends. Don't have any friends, no problemo. Tell some strangers. Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/whobackwhen, all in one word. Are you on Google Plus? Then find us on Google Plus. That's plus Who Back When. And when you do, tell us why you're on Google Plus. Who Back When just got its very own Twitter account, no lie, so give us a follow. You guessed it, that's @WhoBackWhen, all in one word. Check us out on SoundCloud, vote us up on Reddit, listen to us on Stitcher, and head on over to our website, whobackwhen.com, where you can leave a comment, submit a review of your own, and peruse our visual index of aliens, monsters, and more, which increases in kablamos with every episode. And lastly, give us a rating and review on iTunes. Not only would it make us super chuffed, and it really, really would, but as thanks, we will transmigrate your iTunes nom de plume into the credit list of trailers for fake Doctor Who audiobooks produced by Who Back When. Have a poke around our bonus episodes to make more sense of that. That's it. Rock on and be rad and excellent to each other. Catch your ear balls in our next Classic Who Review, New Who Review, or, still funny, Audio Who Review. Cha-chow.
Who Back When?